Welcome to today's episode of the Career Confidence Podcast. Today, I had the absolute pleasure of sitting down with Martha James. Martha is actually one of our mentors in the Big Sister program. And today you will see why. She is somebody that is just truly inspiring. She speaks so well. She tells us how she went from a marketing role into a product owner role and into tech, heading up teams. She is customer experience obsessed, and she explains why every business needs to be, especially as we head into this new way of work. She talks about responsibility, how she continues to upskill herself, what she's learning, and how we can all be prepared for what's next in this working world. So strap in for today's episode. It's full of aha moments. It's full of inspiration. And make sure you reach out to me to let me know what your biggest takeaway is today. So now over to Martha. Martha, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast today. I'm really excited to have you on. We've known each other for a little while now. You have been such a huge part of the Big Sister Mentorship Program, which we're going to go on to speak about because you've been quite the inspiration to the mentees that have been wonderfully coached by you over the last sort of 5 months, and the feedback's been incredible. So I'm really looking forward to diving in. But before we sort of go into sort of the strategies, the tools, everything that everyone needs to know to really excel in their careers, tell us a little bit about you. Take us back to, your early days, your starting new roles. Who is Martha James? So Martha, over to you.
Thank you so much, Georgie. Such a privilege to be here on your podcast. I am a very, a very frequent listener, first time speaker. No, but thank you so much for having me here today. Look, in terms of a little bit about my career, it's always very interesting way just to look at your career back and sort of look what are the connecting dots and what are the patterns. I very early on were interested in two things, definitely numbers and the commercial impacts, but also technology. And what I found myself, even finding my first role, it was to really utilize those two things, but actually adding the most critical component, which was customer experience. So I started very much in lending, in a mortgage origination and lending in financial services. That was my passion. Was part of my major, but instead of going to finance or accounting or origination, I went to marketing, and that's really what inspired me, that continuously changing landscape of customer expectations and how we can improve customer experience and what role technology plays in that. And since then, I never really looked back. What continued to drive me was continuously going and finding organizations that were going through major transformation, and they were looking into how to reinvent themselves or how to reinvent the customer experience, the customer interaction. So often I joined organization and were leading the CRM program implementation or website implementation, personalization, digital advertising. So you can basically probably can tell you how many years of experience I have if we're talking about those things, the innovative aspects of business transformation. But every single time I was always filled by curiosity to learn how those new systems allows us to learn more about our customers and how our customers are perceiving the product and services the organization provides. And how can we enhance that integration, interaction between a customer and organization to obviously provide a value exchange in between? And that was something that fuels me till today. I'm always curious. I'm always looking at what's next on the horizon. But in terms of my career, just going step to it, I progressed obviously through a number of different marketing roles, holding quite senior marketing roles, but I'll be overseeing the whole marketing budget and managing marketing teams across both digital, but also brand and PR. But there was always that itch towards technology. technology, data, understanding more, and really challenging how we're using technology in a customer experience. And to be honest, there was a point of time when I was like, okay, enough of me being the internal client of the technology team. I had enough of trying to negotiate my way around and trying to instigate how we can do differently. I'm going to cross that frontier and move to tech. So I moved to product management and obviously leading the technology teams. And that was a step that I took and I never looked back. That I was very privileged at the time to work at Toyota and joining day one, a guest transformation program when I was leading the single customer view transformation and also implementation of the MarTech stack that was a central platform for all divisions, but also for all the customer communication across all life cycles. So that included also the adjacent Toyota companies such as Toyota Financial Services or Franchise Network was very much truly and it sort of saws a true single view of the customer and single orchestration platform for customer experience. And that's really fueled me to continue to go forward and forward and move from there, continue my journey through product management to companies such as BetEasy. And from there, I joined Whisper as their transformation director. And that was a really insightful role as well, because it wasn't anymore just transforming the customer experience, but was also looking back inside into the organization and how the business operates and reimagining every single process to drive efficiency, cohesiveness, creating bridges between the departments, breaking out the silos. And at the heart of that was obviously the technology that enabled us and really started bringing people together. And that was really fantastic time that I had at Whisper. For almost 3 years, I literally did not leave any stone unturned, looked every single corner of the business to see how can we do things better and how we can innovate. And that obviously had also this onflow effect on the customer innovation as well. And those type of opportunities do not come very often, I would say, both sort of at Toyota and Whisper were sort of quite big transformational roles for me to not only to prove myself and work on something exciting, but also for me to reflect of what is really that fuels me. Where is that excitement is coming from? And most recently, I joined Humbly as the Chief Product and Technology Officer. It's a Melbourne-based startup, very much at the edge of innovating customer experience and customer engagement empowerment. What Humbly offers is really the secret sauce to create meaningful customer engagement and breaking the boundaries for customers to learn complex regulatory concepts in a highly regulated industry such as financial services, utilities, insurance, and so on. And it's been absolutely a fantastic journey. And we know we just touched on it sort of a moment ago about what is a big change to move from a large organization to startup, but it's also a very empowering journey to be able to really shape the future of the organization.
Well, that is it's quite the CV. And there's actually a lot in there that I'm going to pick out now, which is really, really interesting. The first piece that really stands out to me is your dedication and passion around the customer experience. I think that this is what's really actually kind of lacking in certain businesses right now. You know, like everybody says, well, when I have these sort of online experience or in-person experience, the customer experience does seem to be lagging in some organizations right now. And I think, like, you know, making sure that your customers are happy, making sure you're getting that constant feedback, making sure you've always got the end user in mind in everything you do is absolutely crucial for your business. And I think especially as we move into this new tech AI landscape, this human element, this customer experience piece is going to be more and more and more crucial, because the competition is going to be absolutely fierce. And I don't know about you, but I am so put off when there's a really complicated, you know, online process. There's constant hurdles I've got to overcome. Like, oh, I've got to call this person, email this. Why can't this be simple? This is how so many businesses lose customers. So can you talk about maybe like you've joined a lot of organizations, and I want to also come back to how you've pivoted into tech, but what have you learned throughout this process? Like, what actually does a good customer experience look like in a business?
I could not agree with you, Georgie. I'm also very much pulled off by substandard customer experience. Mm-hmm. And that often impacts large organizations, but even small businesses. And that attention to detail to make it easy for customer, it's super, super crucial. And from my experience, often it's actually not a big challenge to resolve internally. It's sometimes just a small investment to actually make it a bit more simplified for the customer. A perfect example, and when you were speaking about it, I was thinking about my experience over the weekend when I tried to book, trying to invest in myself, trying to book a float so I can, you know, just meditate and feel a little bit more re-energized and connected with myself. It was a mission impossible. Between the app and web, when the app had the package that I wanted to book, but it didn't allow me to reset the password. It was redirecting me to the web. When I reset it on web, I needed to, we'll have to remember it. I couldn't, you know, bother to write it down. I was thinking, surely my technology will remember that for me and then input into app. Impossible. On a website, they don't have the offering that I'm after. And to be honest, as I was writing, reaching out to the owner, business owner, and writing an email to saying, oh, this is what I would like to achieve. I cannot, you know, achieve it for those reasons. I almost was so close to writing down what it is that they need to change on their side, including things like domains for password resets to make sure that this is a smooth process and I can actually access my information. So those tiny little moments are really, really crucial, like talking here about password reset or having the same offering on your web and app are crucial moments, macro, but crucial moments in a customer experience. And those moments can put the customer off. So at the moment, we are in a highly competitive market. Customer is the king. Why? Because they can jump on Google, they can jump on ChatGPT and search for the next business that is not too far away, that does exactly the same thing as you, and they have resolved their customers' pain points. So customers are rarely going to come back to you. It's not the times when the customers will be lodging a complaint and tell you why it's not working. If you do have customers that lodge a complaint, thank them because they actually took that extra effort of letting you know something is wrong. Thank them and address that issue. You will have hundreds or thousands or millions of customers that encounter the same problem. They will never let you know. But what they will do, they will change their business. They will go somewhere else and probably will tell another 10 or 20 people how poor the experience was. So that's what is really, really crucial for all the businesses to think about it. And often, as you said, from technology perspective, that lack of, when I sort of speak technology, and we'll be talking here about sort of deep tech, but also the product management, I do feel like those two are very much intertwined. Often what it is, it's focusing on things that are more exciting internally. What you actually really need to do is get your foundations right. If the customer can't do those simple things when they wanted to interact or engage with your business, such as, perfect example, password reset, they're going to, you're putting them off. So often I really see in the businesses forgetting the customer experience, looking in having very fragmented view of just one step that they enhance. It's, you do something, press this button, gives you something exciting, and that's really great because it looks fantastic. It's this moment of something very tangible and visible that a change was made, but it's actually not the most important part in a customer journey. And often I find myself being that advocate for true customer centricity and really taking it from a customer perspective and looking where these issues are, where those friction points are. And often removing small friction points like that can actually generate lots of revenue. I have a perfect example from my time at but easy, where we also had an issue with password on certain steps, and we removed that need for the password. It wasn't and no longer was required by the fraud protection was no longer required from a compliance and legal perspective. It was more of a legacy that was introduced at point of time. By removing that, we got millions in revenue increase by just removing that one friction point. Obviously, I don't want to be really revealing any commercial secrets there, but it was very tiny change. It took 2 hours for one of our technical team to remove that, and it really was in millions that we saw the impact on revenue from that change.
So, and that's exactly my case in point. That's exactly what I'm saying. And I'm one of those customers, sorry to say, that I'm not going to go and spend time unless it's really been frustrating, unless I'm like, right, that was just the worst experience I've ever had and there's no competition. So if I was in a situation where, oh, this is the only product out there in the marketplace, suck it up, right? But I would then probably go away and probably write a potential sort of feedback to say, look, this is where I think, you know, you could improve upon. But that's right. The businesses should really sort of take that on board. Like, I've done them a massive favor. It's the companies that don't get that customer feedback that are guessing, and maybe they're spending millions, you know, like trying a new product or trying a new tool or doing this or doing that. But actually all they need to do, like you just said then, is improve the password reset. And that's probably taken, like you said, 2 hours. But meanwhile, most companies now are like thinking about all of like the bells and whistles. How are we going to integrate AI and all of this stuff? Actually, what you should be doing first and foremost is getting the foundations right, making sure that the technology itself is super, super easy to use before you add any complex tech to it. Yeah, that's really interesting what you're saying there.
Yeah, you mentioned before as well the impact of AI, and this is really, really interesting because AI is obviously very advanced technology based on data science. But if you look at it, how it interacts with us as users, it's a natural human language. So when we're talking about this customer experience of putting customer first, you can tell that the AI, our founders, the fathers of AI, really focused on what will be the key in adoption. And it's that simplicity of using natural language to engage with something which is so powerful and can resolve complex problems, crunch a lot of data that obviously would take us with ourselves and with sort of even help of Excel many hours. So that sort of aspect of that really taking the customer centricity to the next level, it's a perfect example of how AI has been implemented. I'm talking here specifically about ChatGPT, but if you look at a lot of organizations that adopt AI in their technology development, you will see exactly the same patterns. Everything is simplified. Everything is to navigate in a simple, natural language. Even when you're asking for reports and creating reporting dashboards, you no longer need to be sort of focusing on what are the different identifiers and data variables and how they work together. You can ask a question and you're getting reports populated for you based on a question, on the business insight that you're looking to discover. So that's really changes the landscape on how we interact with technology, but also what technology enables and how it's actually going to change the jobs of the future as well.
Mm. Yeah, it's really, really interesting. And just final sort of piece on this whole like customer experience as well. I think it's really important for companies to really think about their end users as well. I think that, you know, you've got such a broad range of people now. You've got some people that haven't grown up with technology. So you need to make sure that, you know, it's accessible for them and it's inclusive for them. You know, it's not like, you know, I was at the airport the other day and you always see like, you know, the older generation printing off their boarding passes and going to the check, you know, they don't want to use the system. So it's like, hey, how are we making sure that we're not leaving that generation behind? And then you've got the flip side of a new generation coming through that have grown up with tech and expect it just to work in an instant, expect fast results, expect the latest and the greatest. So it's that sort of mindset that companies and people in technology need to adopt now of like, how are we developing these products product services for everybody and making sure they are really simple to use, but also they're smooth and they're engaging and they look and feel good as well. It's going to be a really interesting next, you know, sort of decade, I think. You know, it's going to be fascinating to watch this new era that we're moving into. But the customer experience has to be number one. Otherwise, you're not going to have a thriving business. So your skills right now are very, very needed. So tell me more about that transition that you made from sort of more of a marketing role into tech. Like, you know, you just said it's so like effortless, like, oh, and then I joined Toyota and I did this. But what does that actually look like? Because this is where so many people get stuck. Like, they've got some skills, they're interested in getting into a technology company or having more tech sort of, I guess, of a component in their role. How did you make that transition?
Look, it started as a very informal. In a lot of, this is part of my nature. I'm so inquisitive and I love to learn a lot of my roles. And knowing that this is the one guest transformation is taking place and sort of being there representing marketing and my sort of domain, I've really got lots of interest and spent a lot of time with technology teams observing and wanting to learn a lot and bringing my expertise. Even though my role were marketing, I actually had a lot of the domain expertise on how the website technology works, how CRM works, how personalization works, how digital advertising work, and how that sort of data around the customer combining, bringing that all together can make it quite a powerful combination, quite a powerful sort of recipe. Having all that domain knowledge, I started contributing to a lot of the workshops and the discussions the team had, and that sort of very quickly got me, and I'm talking here about weeks, not sort of long time, have that my contribution recognized and sort of move into the product management. But you have to also keep in mind that roles such as product managers did not exist about 10 or 12 years ago, and definitely not in Australia. So even though I was doing that type of role, but under different title, was something that I transitioned in. But the advice I could give to anybody there looking for career change, firstly, just go back to understand what it is that drives you. Where are your strengths? And making sure you're very aware of them, because obviously on that journey to looking for a new role, trying to step up or sort of change horizontally, you probably will encounter some naysayers. I'm not going to say it's going to be a smooth journey. But if you know very crystal clear on your value, on your strengths and what drives you and where you can really sort of spread your wings and sort of really grow, that would really sort of help in having this conversation when you're encountering people that trying to sort of, you know, push you down, sort of tell you it's not, you're not the right person for the role. Because you are, like, the changeover between the roles, it depends on obviously on the roles they are, but there's so many transferable skills that we all bring. As I said, for me, it was that commercial acumen, strategic thinking, critical problem solving, technology experience. I had hands-on technology experience as well as implementing technology through very skilled partners. So I was able to observe how they work and learn from that. To again, just completely step in and sort of leading the tech teams, where we're talking about building websites in code instead of CMS. It was a huge learning curve for me, but I was curious and I was absorbing all the information, but also feeling okay to ask questions. I don't know how it works. Sometimes, you know, my colleagues were laughing that I'm using sort of, you know, my, you know, for a long time, I was using a little bit of excuse. I'm just a marketing person. Can you explain to me in a very simple terms, knowing that I actually know quite a lot about the field, but I just needed that information to be break down the way that I could learn. And I need to learn, to know, I need to need and I have the need to know the background, the big picture, but I also have a need for detail. So I do need to have the detail to be able to understand how things work. And that meant that I needed to engage with engineers, and having that conversation that might have been initially, quite uneasy for both of us, on me asking them to speak in layman terms and them looking at me saying, why are you even interested in how the integrations work? Why you don't just stay in your lane and just do product management? But that's not me. I've always wanted to know, and I've always wanted to know more and getting understanding of how things work. So the advice, as I said before, about knowing your strengths, it's also learning. Every interaction for me, it's an opportunity to learn. Every opportunity that I could spend time with my tech leads and my engineers and having conversations and learning more about systems. Solution architects, absolutely my best friends come from that domain. Why? Because we all big picture people, but also need to understand the detail and have just fabulous, build fabulous friendships out of the group. But simply, again, being fueled by the same passion and curiosity to do things differently, that interest that let people open up to me and allowing me to learn on a job, even though that wasn't my job per se.
So much amazing points you just made in there. So I'm just going to pick out a few. I think the first one that's always really interesting to me, I really am tuning in when people speak, and especially women like yourself that have really gone on to achieve incredible things in their career. But you said know your strengths and know your value. And I think that this is something that we all need to really spend time developing. I think we need to understand what can we offer? What are our strengths? What value can we bring to an organization? Because every single person has some form of value based on your past experiences, based on what you know, based on your own insights and opinions. And I think that's the first piece. I always encourage women to really understand, like, in order to sell yourself, in order to step up into a business, you need to value yourself and value your skills. And if you don't, no one else will. So I think that's really, really powerful, because you had that sense of self. So when you were asking questions, you didn't feel like a fraud. You didn't feel like an imposter. You were just like, I need to know the answer to this, because if I know the answer to this, I can do my job to a very high standard. So that curiosity, but also that like ability to just take charge and be like, right, I need to know more about this. Can you tell me about this? And I'm sure you did it in a really sort of, probably less direct way, but it's knowing your value. It's knowing your strengths and what you bring to an organization that I think then helps you overcome the imposter syndrome of not knowing, because you don't know everything. No one knows everything, but that curiosity, that sort of like confidence that you had to walk into an organization and learn on the job, it's not something that I think everybody is good at. So what advice would you have for somebody that is just joined an organization or is thinking about joining like organization, is thinking, I don't know about that, or I'm not confident about that, or, or I think I'd be well out of my depth if I jumped into that role. What advice would you have for that person that wants to take the leap but is maybe a bit fearful at the moment of doing so?
That's a very good question, Georgie. It all obviously depends on a personality and how do they like to interact. But in terms of just try to engage yourself with some projects or with certain teams to the extent that you're feeling comfortable and build up your knowledge that way. And this is something that often you can do it in a very informal way. Just catching up with somebody and just asking questions and learning over coffee, going for lunch together. It doesn't need to be a formal way of learning. I feel like often individuals are expecting that it will be like some sort of formal way of saying, okay, now stop, and now you're going to just be partnered with so-and-so and learn. In large organizations, often there is opportunity for that. But I would say in reality, where we're all very, very busy or working in a smaller to medium-sized organization, that might not be opportunity to do so. But what you can do, you can use your informal channels to try and gain that knowledge and that learning and just speak to somebody and just try and show the interest in the role. And even, suggest something that you can work out a problem together, and you can see how they work and how the role fits into that. But there was some another thing that you mentioned before that kind of got me thinking a little bit as well, especially for product managers or other sort of, you know, leaders within an organization. There is often that expectation that you need to know everything, that you need to be able to answer, have all the answers and all the decisions. And that's not the case. So often what I see what I really recommend to sort of budding product managers, reach out to your peers and learn from them. You obviously have a role that requires you to represent business interest, customer interest. You need to understand the technology to some respect of how what's possible, and designing great and working with your UX designers, designing great experiences. But at the end of the day, you don't need to make all those decisions yourself. You're surrounded by highly skilled subject matter experts. Harness their knowledge, harness their passion, their expertise to bring that synergy and creating really amazing solutions. So don't beat yourself to be able, because I feel like maybe, and I'm not all saying it's always the case, but often the imposter syndrome in some of the product roles can come from that position that you need to have all the answers. And what I'm saying, you don't need to have all the answers. Even as leading my tech teams, so that's sort of a number of technology teams in my roles previously, I don't need to have all the answers. I don't need to be person on tools. What I need to be able is to bring the best out of my people, being able to refer to them to subject matter experts and asking them how would they solve it. And then sort of acting like as a sensing board with what it is that sort of the right solution. Have we considered everything? Is that giving us the right solution for the business impact, for the customer impact? And just work that way through. So this is something that I would like any people who are stepping into the leadership roles to be very mindful. You don't need to be at the best at doing everything and knowing everything. You're surrounded by experts. Bring that expertise through your surrounding networks, through your peers, through your teams, and let them shine. Let them contribute in the most valuable way.
I think you're touching upon something that's so important and probably doesn't get discussed enough when it comes to leadership, and it is that whole power of vulnerability. It's like, as a leader, you don't have to know everything. And that's just so, so powerful. And I just want everyone to really just sit with that for a second, because I think that especially women, because I know I've done this, I've gone, I'm not ready yet. And I'll talk myself out of a position because I don't feel ready, or I feel like, oh, I don't have enough. I need to go away and find out more about that, or I need to go and upskill in that. I'm just delaying and I'm just sort of like procrastinating because I'm waiting for the perfect time, or when, you know, and that's never, ever going to come. And sometimes, you know, you need to just take that little step forward, back yourself, believe in yourself, you know, stack the evidence that I've got this and look at what I've done before. And, you know, as long as I'm surrounded by a really good team, I can delegate, I can have these conversations, I can speak to the devs over here and speak to the designers over here and speak to, you know, the stakeholders over here and really get a sense of like, what are we all trying to achieve? Because at the end of the day, if you've got a good team and a good culture, we're all trying to achieve the same thing. And it's just about making sure that everybody's in the same, you know, energy field, everyone's sort of moving forward in the same way, everyone knows what their role is. And you as a leader is just basically being almost like the glue and just being like making sure that everyone is knowing what they're supposed to do, driving forward, you're there for them when times get tough. And but you don't have to know everything before you step up into a new role. And I do think this is what holds so many people back. You have also been, as I said at the start, a really big part of this Big Sister mentorship program. I'm sure that's given you some probably insights into some interesting maybe patterns and the ways that, you know, women do think and hold themselves back. So let's talk to that now as well, because I'm sure that there's probably some people listening to this that are like, you know, I'm ready for that next step. I'm ready to take that leap. But what do you think holds so many people back from really going for the next career promotion or, you know, transitioning to into a whole other industry? What do you see as some patterns over the course of your own leadership journey?
No, that's absolutely right, Georgie. There is a lot of that internal dialogue, I think, that a lot of women have to say, we're not ready. I need to still learn. And to be honest, from my experience with mentoring others through the Sisterhood program, it was really great success. And I was so pleased to be part of that. I'm looking forward to the next cohort as well. But even from my informal networks, it's that sort of self-doubt. I need more. I can't speak about what it is with, as we spoke before, what is my value? What can I deliver into this role? And that definitely is one, just waiting for this moment of finally being ready. This moment is not going to arrive. We're never ready. It's about challenging yourself and taking that step. Like, what's worse that it can happen? Well, you might fail, you might just get a couple hiccups, which is also a learning journey. And I think that's what we need to be very mindful in, that our journey as leaders or, you know, subject matter experts in our field, it's not about constantly succeeding. It's about trying, failing fast, learning from it and stepping up. For me, also in this situation, I've always been very vulnerable and very transparent. If I made a mistake and I made a mistake in a decision or in action, I will call it out. Is it to my leadership team or is it in front of my team saying, look, that's decision. I saw it from this perspective, but I now know it when I know it's I would change that decision, or sorry, that wasn't quite the right decision, and you know, I should have considered X, Y, Z. It's okay to go back to your teams and saying things didn't work out. It's perfectly fine. I think that level of transparency and authenticity really builds strong teams. Often we would work on, you know, I worked for one company that I joined in very turbulent time around COVID outbreak sort of starting. And it was a lot of change, lots constantly changes. Obviously, it was very turbulent times for all the markets, but also the company itself undergoing a lot of restructure. And I went every single time, I went to the team, yes, we built something 80%. But now it's a change in direction. This is why the business made the decision. This is my understanding. It doesn't take away from the amazing work that you guys as a team. Let's, you know, high five. Let's have a bit of laughter. Let's you know, let's have a few jokes. Let it all out, vent out. Okay, from tomorrow, we're moving on to this project. And you just need to. You just sometimes need to be extremely honest. There are things outside your control. There are things sometimes outside, in this case, also business controls, things like a global pandemic happening. No, nobody could really control that you need to just progress. So that, you know, that, as I said, don't wait for perfect role and perfect timing. It's not going to happen. Take risks. And if something, you know, if you trip over here and there, learn from that, call it out, own it, and just keep moving forward. Often what I'm also hearing in a lot of mentorship discussions that I have, that there is that expectation of having a formal recognition. And I completely appreciate why, because it feels great to be fired, to be said, hey, so-and-so delivers so much. Now you're getting recognized, you're getting promoted, you're getting to move to the role. What I found from my journey, often those promotions happen because I took that extra initiative, took on extra responsibilities. I would run sort of almost two functions at the same time. But that was something that I was prepared to do. And now this is one of those, you know, old leadership sayings, act for the role that you wanted to be in. But I truly did. I acted for the role I wanted to be. That was the role I wanted to be. And that role was made for me because I already made it so much impact. It was hard not to recognize that I'm doing this role. I'm performing this role. There was no question asked. I wasn't asking for permission. I was simply following. I didn't neglect any of my responsibilities. It was about juggling it, about taking more, about putting myself in an uncomfortable position. But I loved it. And that's what I think a lot of us need to think about. The work comes from within. And that's what is really important in a mentorship programs as well. It's amazing to, for me as a mentor, to connect with ladies in this case, looking for some advice, looking for some sounding board and helping them out. But the work will come from within. They need to be ready to do the work. They need to be ready to get out of the comfort zone and do things differently. If what they were doing so far didn't get them to where they want to be, they need to change something. And sometimes, as you said, it's always procrastinating and finding reasons why. And I'm not saying that I don't have those moments. I do. I truly have that kind of discussion with my internal self just yesterday about me exercising, getting better exercise routine after, Christmas and January, which things were all over the shop. And what I meant, I went to gym yesterday. I got up today at 6. I signed up myself for a class. I couldn't find excuses in the morning and went for it. Well, I took action to change something about myself that makes me uncomfortable at the moment. That's not where I wanted to be. And, as much as it is talking here about physical fitness versus career, but it works exactly the same. You need to find that strength in within to take an action. It's not going to happen. No matter how many people you talk to about, no matter how many exciting roles are on the market, if you do not take action and apply for this role or learn something else or put your hand up to be part of the project or start talking to another sort of leaders within the business to tell them what it is that you do and you would like to go move to the area, it's not going to happen on its own.
Mic drop, Martha, mic drop. I completely agree with everything you've just said. And I'm so glad we've gone here because what you're touching on is all about that whole self-responsibility, right? If you don't like something about your life or your career, your health, whatever, you have the power to change it. No one else has come in to say, hey, good job, you should do this. Or, hey, no one's come in to encourage you, to motivate you. You have to do that yourself. And I do think that every single, we're in a brand new year now, right? Look back on the last 5 years. If not much has changed in your life, then it's time to sort of do some deep reflection work and be like, why is this? Because I think what people have a habit to do, and I used to do this myself, is blame the external world. Well, I can't get this promotion, or I can't get healthy because of this person, this person, this person. No, absolute nonsense. You have to take self-responsibility. You are in the position right now because of the choices and the decisions that you have made. I know some people do get, the lucky genes, and some people, come from more of a privileged upbringing than others, but still people come from real hardship and end up doing really well. And people come from privilege and end up, on the streets doing drugs. So we all have these choices to make in our lives. And I think it's so powerful what you've just said, because you've constantly worked on your internal world and your internal dialogue. And even now you're looking to improve yourself because you've identified, right, I want to get a bit healthier. So what's my excuse now? There's no excuse. I need to get myself in the gym and I'm going to do it. I love it. I think it's really, really important. It doesn't get talked about enough because we're sort of waiting for the companies we work for to tap us on the shoulder and say, hey, you're ready. No one's going to do that. That's why you have to constantly do the work on yourself. So outside of, I guess, taking that self-responsibility, anything that you do on a regular basis, have you read any great books? Have you listened to any good podcasts? Have you gone to any good seminars? Any sort of work that you've done that's really made an impact on your life that you'd like to share that might sort of help others?
Mm-hmm. I do love, I love good podcasts and I love good audiobook. And recently I rediscovered Blinkist. I do find myself walking quite a lot with my dog, but also sometimes when I'm doing chores, I just need something that sort of feels still quite stimulating. So I do a lot of that. So if you think about it, probably about 3 to 4 hours a day in the morning, exercising, listening to audiobook or a podcast, and the same, walking the dog, and in evenings, I don't really have any specific go-to. I do like to change quite a bit. I do listen to your podcast. You very much so. I do like some of the self-improvement, self-realization podcasts of Mel Robbins. But when it comes to tech specifically, it all varies. There was a period of time that I signed up myself to every single Gartner seminar for CIOs and cybersecurity and AI, and I was super passionate about it. And literally for about, I would say, almost 2.5 months, that's all I was listening to. And I came out of that wave. And I'm also at the verge of starting my board director career. So I listen to a lot of webinars around board directors and different skills and find that really interesting. So often for me, it comes in the leaps and bounds, but I do find that I do like to listen to things that inspire me. Those are the moments when I'm, you know, let's say smelling the roses, walking the dog, can take in oxygen. And this is the time when I can listen to something that will inspire me or start myself questioning my thinking, or put some interest, curiosity that will come home and I'll look up something and learn a little bit more. And I would highly recommend that. I mean, as I said, don't really have a specific hit list. Sometimes it's just truly what sort of sparks up, what comes up, sometimes even from my LinkedIn feed. Or these days, AI does such a good job that I just get recommendations coming through all those channels that I'm using quite frequently in a sort of specific areas. But look, there's a lot of good content. It's about, and what we're talking about, even I'll take it sort of step further, I'm thinking about often keeping yourself relevant and upskilling and learning. And you can do that a lot of, on the job, or you can, read about it, learn about it. Use those times. As I said, for me, walking the dog, doing the weekly chores, exercising is a time that I can digest that content. So it takes the pressure away from me to find another hour somewhere in the day to dedicate for upskilling or learning new concepts. It comes part to my becomes part of my other daily routines, and it's something just, in the background. And sometimes I'm more attentive, sometimes I'm less attentive, but nonetheless, I'm giving myself this opportunity to just challenge my viewpoints, learn something new, expand and grow.
Yeah, I do exactly the same thing. I sort of call it like my habit stacking. So if I'm in the gym or if I'm going for a run, I have something just in the back of my ears, and it could be an audiobook, it could be a podcast. And like you as well, like if I'm interested in something, AI or, whatever, like crypto or new tech or something, I'll just sort of immerse myself in that world for a little bit. But what I always come back to, because I know it's the absolute foundation, is all to do with like psychology and mindset. I think that has always been the key, I guess, podcasts, audiobooks, I always like to go back to, because I think that we can learn everything there is to learn about AI and tech and whatever industry that we're in. But if we're not looking after what our thoughts and our feelings and our emotions, a lot of it all comes down to the energy that we're in every single day, because we're not going to want to progress. We're not going to want to learn. We're not going to want to, do well at work if we're in a lousy state of mind or if we're not feeling energized. I feel like this is such an important part of people's careers, people's lives. It's like you can go away and learn everything there is to know about a certain subject, but if you're in a lousy state, you're not going to absorb all of that. So I always make sure that I'm doing everything every day, probably sounds a bit like yourself as well, to energize myself first and foremost, so I'm in the right state to take in that information, to go into work and be a great leader, to learn from others. Because if I go in, I can't be able to be here today, I'm not really feeling it today, I'm not going to learn anything, I'm not going to take anything in, I'm not going to inspire anybody, and I'm certainly not going to be tapped on the shoulder and being like, George, you're ready for that promotion. So I do really think people need to invest in themselves, in their growth, and especially in this new world, their mindset. And you also mentioned a word that I'm keep on hearing as well, as that whole adaptability piece, because change is coming and we do need to be able to adapt. So on that note, sort of final sort of few questions for you. What are you, I guess, most excited about? What are you, Martha James, currently sort of really focusing on in your career? What are you sort of, you mentioned, you have dived into AI, but I'm asking a lot of people in tech this question, like, what are your predictions? how long have we got before the world is completely changed? Like, I'm hearing some really interesting things at the moment. People are saying 2030. It's almost like people can't see past 2030 at the moment. What are your predictions? What are your thoughts?
I think it's always the case when you're changing decades and people have real problem with seeing what 2031 is going to look like. I remember the same was on a big celebration at 2020. I mean, COVID sort of took over, and but it just felt like it was the gloom was hitting us because it was a new decade and things were changing and not going as well as we wanted to do. I don't know if it's 2030. I'm sort of thinking that these days the tech is changing so quickly and evolves so quickly due to AI empowerment that we're going to be really stretched in how we're interacting with technology and how it takes up a sort of, you know, space in what kind of spaces plays in our roles. The reason I'm saying that, because 2030, it's like almost saying, hey, this is, it's like a project management. By 2030, this is going to be changed, but it's not going to be that because there will be, we humans, certain industries will move faster with the change, certain will move slower. Certain individuals will adopt the change faster, some will be slower. So there will be a big transition period. But what it really is, it's the fact that AI creates empowerment and it just transforms our engagement with technology and transforms the roles and transforms the opportunity. So there is a lot of discussions about AI taking on jobs and, you know, just big numbers. But think about it. Not long ago, the computers took jobs. Email took jobs because you used to have mail rooms and you would have dedicated personnel to write letters and secretaries and everything was on letterhead. So even in the jobs in terms of letterhead manufacturing, like all of those things change. We're no longer buying envelopes. We're no longer buying stamps. Even Australia Post has to adjust and now we just sending parcels because nobody communicates by letters, but we love buying online. So the technology transitioned or transformed how we interact with each other, how we interact with businesses and what it is that we're doing on a daily basis in our roles. And AI, it's going to accelerate it faster than any other adoption because it has the ease of adoption, it has the cost accessibility, there's very little hurdles to start using AI and start implementing it. There's been obviously a lot of AI adoption is even driven by our vendors. So you start, perfect example, you're putting something, a search phrase into Google, the first result is AI summary. So we haven't chosen to look at it. We'll look at it, it's on top of it. So if I say, I don't want to be using AI, I will have to cover that part of my screen to say, don't want to look at that anymore. But it does play a role and it's going to, it's the same machine learning. It is so laced through everything that we do and every bits of technology that we cannot stop it. The question is always obviously about ethical AI. It's about the governing structures. How do we protect ourselves from malicious actors and all of that? But that adoption is already well underway and it's, you know, just going to sort of continue to speed through. So if I sort of look at that step into this sort of 2030, we would obviously have an influx of a lot of new roles that very much over this, obviously a lot of roles that are going to grow in data science, machine learning, database management, prompt engineering. But I think it's also how it's going to transform a lot of other roles where we're going to get so many efficiencies that the individuals will need to use the critical thinking and actually be able to interpret the results of what the AI output is instead of mimicking what AI can do for us this day. So that will be that big shift. I think overall, maybe that's more of a wishful thinking than a prediction, but I do hope that the curriculums at school and universities are going to change. The way, obviously, we see a lot of that structure being quite traditional structure of learning, but we need to think differently on how to teach the kids the skills of curiosity, inquisitivity, that exploration, critical thinking, because finding facts at the moment, you put it into AI and it gives you the whole essay or the whole work is done. So we need to readjust how we're teaching kids those skills, because those skills will be important. The access to information is already there. It's more about what we're doing with that information, that critical thinking. It's super, super important. Problem solving, that sort of looking at innovative way of approaching topics. That's what it is important that we need to teach sort of students, we need to teach our young kids, because the technology will be there to do a lot of the things that we're asking them to do today.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think it's just going to be a world that none of us can really sort of fathom. And I think that's probably what makes it quite scary, is that it's fear of the unknown, right? It's fear of like, what jobs are going to be created from this? And, you know, is AI going to take my job? Well, you know, potentially, which is why I'm encouraging everyone to upskill, everyone to play around, everyone to be curious. Like, that word comes up a lot about, you know, what the technology is and what it can enable. And I think that we need to also think about how we are promoting this and marketing this. As a marketer, you know, I think you'll probably have a thought about this as well, but it's like, you know, I think technology sometimes can be used as a weapon, and it can be seen as like all these complex words. And actually, when you strip it all back, like you said, a lot of it's problem solving. A lot of it is like, you know, going in and being like, what problems are this that I need to be solved? And, you know, mathematics and, you know, all of these sort of different things that people think, oh, that's really, really hard. Well, actually, when you break it all down, it's not. It can be quite simple. And I think if young children get exposed to it from a really super, super young age, they're not going to be afraid of it. But I think there's a whole generation that is just petrified of what the new world is going to look like. And I hope, I'm optimistic that it will be an enabler. It will enable human beings to do what human beings do best and really use our creativity and hopefully free up time to actually spend time with loved ones as well. Wouldn't that be nice if we could reduce our workload a little bit and have more time with the people that we love and care about as well? So who knows what it's going to look like, but I do think that we need to sort of come up with a few different job titles and a few different ways of marketing AI and what's coming, because otherwise we could rule out a whole demographic, which is my concern as well. But yeah, any thoughts on that before we finish up today? Because I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. There's obviously the younger generation is going to adopt very well. I just feel like we just need to teach them those basic fundamental skills that we learned in the traditional ways into sort of converting into the concepts that are more relatable to them. In terms of the older generation, it will be quite interesting, because I do think that even at the moment, there is a little bit of that barrier, you know, the fear, the barrier to entry into AI, and it sounds like it's going to take over everything. But I think it's going to really help, especially the voice-enabled AI for you know, people with vision impaired, that obviously have problems with reading and accessing it. The ability of communicating and getting the updates through voice controls and being able to access different systems. I don't need to be logging to this. I don't need to be logging to that. Just getting that information, we're just asking prompts in a true language. It's definitely something that will become more accustomed, but it is going to be a bit of transition. There's definitely the component of fear of perceiving AI as a threat, and that same happened before, but it's going to obviously, hopefully we can overcome that, and change it quickly.
I hope so too. Martha, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. You've said so many incredible things today, and I just want to thank you for your time. Thank you for being such an incredible mentor. Thank you for being such a strong, visible representation of women in technology as well, because we need more of you to come out and use your voice and showcase what a great career in technology can look like. So thank you. And finally, where can I send people who would like to connect with you and find out more about what you do? Where do you hang out the most?
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much, Georgie, for having me on a podcast and giving me the chance to share some of my experiences and my thoughts. Best place to connect with myself, LinkedIn. Send me DM, connect. I'll be happy to chat, reach out. I'm always open to new connections and connecting with interesting people. So don't hesitate.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Georgie.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thank you so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you.